News Talk 580 KMJ presents Hometown Heroes, honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, coming to you each and every Sunday afternoon here on News Talk 580 KMJ and KMJ580.com. We're going to have some very lively and exciting tales today from a Navy veteran of World War II, a man who owns a Purple Heart, and some pretty incredible stories of survival and intense battle. One of the biggest underdog stories of all time as far as the Navy goes. If you thought Fresno State was a big underdog in Omaha, wait until you hear what Claude Gassio has to tell us about today. But before we get to that, a man who I think can give us a pretty good introduction of Claude and has a few other things to talk about with us today, Bill Dietzel. You know him as publisher of Veterans Magazine, which is headquartered in Fresno, and he's got his hands in just about every veterans-related endeavor in the Valley, including a real exciting opportunity for veterans and the families of veterans to honor them with a new wall going up in front of the VA Medical Center. Bill, tell us about that wall, what the purpose is, and how folks can get involved.
Well, thank you, Paul. The Wall of Honor is exactly what it says it is. It's where you can honor your loved one, you yourself, or a past veteran, or somebody that was killed in action, or KIA'd. And this is done through the Leadership 2008 fundraising campaign that the United States Air Power Museum is supporting. And what happens is, in the front of the VA hospital, over on the right-hand side, you look, there's a retaining wall there, and right there they're going to install a beautiful Blue Star Memorial Gardens, which will consist of the Wall of Honor, which is in black granite. This provides a place where people could be recognized and honored for their service while in the military. If you want some more information on it, you can call me at 291-1239 or 291-1239, and I'd be glad to send you some information on it. What you end up doing is you get a 4x8 area that has 60 or 3 lines, and there's 20 characters to a line, or you get 60 characters on a 3-line area. And that's where you can place anything that you want. For example, William E. Dietzel, United States Air Force, flight engineer, Korea, Vietnam, and other known, unknown places in the world. But I advise everybody to come take advantage of it and honor your veteran and let them know that you believe in the freedom that they provided, and we honor by doing this way.
And it's only $150 to put one of those sections up there, and it's going to be there forever. And we know that there are hundreds of veterans that visit the VA Medical Center in Fresno from all over the valley every day. So every time anyone pulls into that parking lot, not just the veterans themselves, but anyone who comes in for a ceremony, and there are plenty of those over at the VA Medical Center, everybody who parks in that parking lot is going to walk right past that and see all those names up there. And I understand you've gotten a lot of interest already, a lot of people signing up. Is there a chance to go beyond the capacity you have right now and to keep filling up that wall in perpetuity?
Well, the word in perpetuity takes us out there a long ways, and this wall's only 150 feet. But our objective is right now is to have 102 on the wall. If we exceed that, depending on how many do sign up for that next 102. So if it all comes about, right now we have 82 veterans that have joined up on the wall. And a lot of these are previous people that's passed that the brother and sister's honoring or whomever. So we invite you to come over. It's $150. Where else can you get your name recognized today for $150 and be honored at the same time in front of a establishment that are going to be there for a long, long time, long after we're mere dust and clay?
Well, yeah, it costs a lot more than that just to get an obituary in the newspaper when a veteran passes away. So this seems like a very appropriate way to honor a veteran who may or may not still be living. It doesn't matter when he or she served, but you could get that name up on the veteran's wall. And you have another fundraiser coming up as well, a big dinner out in Clovis?
The Leadership 2008, which is a committee that's over at the VA hospital, is putting on an annual Leadership 2008 program. And we're so proud of this thing because we're having Elvis Presley. I talked to him the other day down at 7-Eleven. He said, sure. I'll be glad to come over and perform. So Elvis Presley will be there, and the Red River Dutchman, which plays 30s and 40s oompa music, good polka music, all good right. dance music. And we have a wonderful silent auction. A silent auction is going to go on, and we're going to auction off some great, great trips like Bass Lake for 3 days. That's pretty awesome. And then we got trips to Acapulco, and we're going to auction these off, and we invite everybody to come on. All this money goes towards the Wall of Honor and preparing for the future and to make this beautiful Blue Star Memorial Garden a place of honor.
Well, that sounds like a very noble endeavor, and that dinner is going to be August the 9th at the Clovis Memorial Building on 5th and Hughes in the city of Clovis. The Clovis Memorial District does a great job of honoring our veterans here in the Valley. So that's where and when that'll be. And same phone number if people want to get involved there.
291-1239. At the number is 291-1239. That's playing the DJ here.
And that, of course, is in the 559 area code. So when Bill is not working on this Wall of Honor or putting fundraising dinners together, he's busy publishing a great magazine that you may have seen around town or around the country in your travels, because Veterans Magazine is just about everywhere now. And one of the veterans that you had a chance to feature in your magazine is the guy sitting to your right, Claude Gassio. And he's going to tell us in his own words some of the things he experienced. But as a veteran yourself, when you look at him and think about the things that he did, what stands out in your mind? How would you give him your best introduction for our listeners?
Claude Gassio is truly a Navy person. Truly an honor to know him. I happen to write the story about him, and he's an outstanding individual. And yes, he sacrificed because he is a Purple Heart recipient with the United States Navy, and was one of the toughest battles the Pacific has ever had. And I'm very proud to know Claude Gassio.
Well, and I think hopefully by the end of this program, our listeners will feel the same way. So we'll have Bill slide that microphone on over to Claude and start talking to him a little bit here. Again, that number for Bill Dietzel, if you want to get in on the Wall of Honor, honor a veteran in your life, that's 291-1239 in the 559 area code. I'll give that to you again at the end of the program. And now, the aforementioned Claude Gassio, Navy veteran of World War II. Claude, let's start early on here. Long before you got involved in one of the biggest underdog stories of all time, as far as the Navy's concerned, I imagine you remember where you were and what was going on when you heard about the attacks on Pearl Harbor. That seems to be the seminal moment for just about every veteran. What do you remember about that Sunday morning?
I was in Los Angeles, California on December 7th, 1941, when I heard about it.
How old were you at the time?
I was probably 17 years old. My grandfather was listening to the radio, and the news then said that the Japanese were probably going to come to California. My cousin and I, we went down that night to the Long Beach, San Pedro. My grandfather gave me his .38, my uncle gave my cousin his .38, and we went down there to wait for him.
You were waiting at Long Beach for the Japanese.
Yeah, and San Pedro. We went down there several nights. After that, I went and I volunteered for the Navy, and I was accepted. So from then on, I was a sailor.
What was it about the Navy that you gravitated towards as opposed to the Army or the Air Corps?
Well, I just felt the Navy was a place to go. That's where we were going to be needed.
Well, it turns out you would be needed, but I imagine the early days of your time in the Navy, you probably faced a few challenges. There are probably a couple moments where you said, hey, this might be a little tougher than what I imagined.
Well, I mean, they were a little hard on us in boot camp. They didn't have much time to get us going. I mean, they were strict, worked us hard, daylight to dusk, marched, did everything, taught us a few things, and it was a good outfit. I enjoyed the Navy. I really did. Even though I had a bad couple of bad experiences, I think it is a good place for any young fella to go and get a trade or learn about his country.
And the ladies love those bell-bottom trousers, don't they?
Oh, yes, they did.
Maybe that was your secret ambition, to wear those bell-bottom trousers.
They all wanted to know about the 13 buttons. I don't know if they still have the 13 buttons. I don't think so.
There are a lot of things that you can do in the Navy. There are so many different duties and assignments.
It's like I tell young people today. You can go in the Navy or in the service, any of them. I prefer the Navy. No matter what you want to be, they can teach you. They need clerks, they need shoemakers, they need barbers, they need cooks. Any trade that you can get out here, you can get from the service. And it is something that, well, it's experience to be had.
Well, and every young sailor has an idea of what he would like to do in the Navy. Uncle Sam always has the final word on that. But was there something that you instantly thought, you know what, that's going to be the area that I want to get involved in?
Well, that is up to the Navy. I mean, they more or less assign you to what you're best capable of doing.
And in your case, what was that?
I was a cook. I had been a cook before I went in. So they needed them. That's where I went. They didn't ask me if, when, and how, but now.
That's the way it goes. And you would end up doing a whole lot more than cook breakfast, lunch, and dinner by the time your days in the Navy were over. Okay. We're going to take our first commercial break here. When we come back, we're going to hear more from Claude Gassio about what he experienced in the Navy, including, as I mentioned, that great underdog story, what's been called in a famous book as The Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors. And Claude was a big part of that. We'll hear from him and hear that story when Hometown Heroes continues on News Talk 580 KMJ.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Lafler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
At a time or two. Claude Gassio sure has. He served in the U.S. Navy during World War II. You heard him talk about when he heard about the Pearl Harbor attacks, went down to the piers in Long Beach and San Pedro with a .38 revolver waiting for the Japanese to show up. But not long after that, he had that Navy uniform and was off to work, his duties initially as a cook for Uncle Sam's Navy. And what kind of a ship did you end up on, Claude?
I was on a small escort carrier, CVE-68, USS Kalinin Bay. Overall length of the flight deck was 500 foot. The pilots had 300 feet to land the airplane in.
That's a pretty big ship.
No, not compared to what they are today or what they were then.
Well, yeah, quite be the Big E, I suppose.
The Big E was probably 1,000 foot at the time.
But for you at that time, and having to cook for a bunch of those guys on board, that sounds like a pretty tall order.
There was probably 1,100 men overall on the ship.
Now, every veteran has his welcome to the Navy moment, welcome to the Army moment, welcome to the Marines moment. For you, what was that, maybe not so much welcome to the Navy, but welcome to the war. What was that first real intense moment where you thought, wow, this is what war is like. This is what I'm a part of now.
Well, it's hard to say which part. After I got out of boot camp, I went to Bremerton, Washington. From Bremerton, Washington, I went to Tacoma, Washington. From Tacoma, Washington, I went to Astoria, Oregon, where the ship was commissioned. It was built by Kaiser. We went down the river to Sandpoint, Oregon. From there, we came up the coast to San Francisco, San Pedro, San Diego. Then we embarked to the Pacific. We were at the Pacific for the first big engagement, which was when the Army, the Marines, everybody landed on the Marshall Gilbert Islands, I do believe, if I remember right. That was the beginning of my beautiful trip in the Navy.
Now, if somebody heard all the details of what you experienced, they might not characterize it as beautiful, but you're here today talking about it, so certainly in that sense, it's beautiful, and we're thankful for that.
The good Lord was with us that day. He was sitting on our shoulder.
Amen. Well, I do want to spend a good deal of time talking about the most intense experience that that you and your group had, what's been famously called in an acclaimed book by James Hornfisher as The Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors, the extraordinary World War II story of the U.S. Navy's finest hour, that that details some of the events that you experienced in late 1944. But chronologically speaking, anything between what we've been talking about and those events in the fall of 1944 that you think our listeners ought to hear about?
Well, I was in five sea engagements before I got to the Philippines, and we saw quite a few of them. But the Philippines, we were getting ready to refuel at sea, and I was on the number one sponson, helping the first lieutenant with a rope, holding the line, at refueling line. It hit the water and jerked me over. I fell down. When I came up, I could touch the side of the ship. The ship was doing probably 14, 15 knots. I was in the water for a little over 4 hours before a destroyer picked me up. That was another good day when the good Lord was with me.
When they picked you up, it made it a good day. For about 4 hours, it didn't seem like such a good day.
That's right.
Now, you showed me a picture that you have of a handsome young sailor with a life preserver around his waist. You said you knew it was you because that particular kind of life preserver. Is that something that came
that
in handy that day?
Usually worn by pilots. It was like a belt, and it had CO2 bottles in it. When I came back aboard ship, I fought everybody in the supply depot to get one. When I went take a shower, the belt went with me. When I went to bed, the belt was there. I never let that belt out of my hands.
So you didn't have it until after this little adventure?
I did have nothing when I was in the water. I had no life preserver, no nothing. I just was there with nothing for 4 hours and a little over 4 hours.
So if the ship is doing 14, 15 knots, you're not in the water long before it's long gone.
Oh, yes. When I came up, as I say, I came up, I could have touched it. The next time I looked back to see it, it was long gone, way gone.
Now, that has to be somewhat frightening. Where geographically was this that this happened?
In the Pacific. I don't know exactly which islands we were in, so many of them out there that I can't remember. But I do remember that I thought, and it's silly, that I remembered that Japan came up as a volcano out of the ocean, and I would try and touch bottom every time I thought there was an island coming up under me. But I know better now.
Well, I imagine at the time you're thinking all kinds of things.
Oh, yes.
All of which...
Oh, yes.
Now, so you're in the water, and obviously the guys that you were working with on board knew that you had gone overboard.
Oh, yes.
But when you've got an 1,100-man ship and you've got a mission, you can't necessarily turn around and go looking for Gassio.
Oh, no. They would have never slowed down for five or six of us if it had been that even. I mean, why they cannot endanger the ship for one person when there's 1,100? The odds are against you. I think in all the time the ship was in commission, I was the only one that ever came back aboard ship. And I think there was about 15 of us that went overboard in the time that the ship was in commission.
Wow. Well.
Well, some were at night, though. They got thrown over, I believe.
Those guys weren't supposed to come back. But like you said, the good Lord was definitely looking out for you. But 4 hours in the water with nothing to help keep you
nothing,
afloat.
Nothing.
That's a lot of treading water.
Oh, yes. But you learn how to float good out there. I mean, I treaded water until they threw a what's called a heaving line. It's a lead ball wrapped in rope, and they twirl it, and they can throw it hundreds of feet.
Right.
And they threw one, and it fell maybe 20 feet from me, and I didn't even attempt because I know it's loaded with lead. The next guy had my arm up in the air, threw it, and the line went right over my shoulder. I wrapped my arm on it, and they pulled me up. They got down on the bumper in the back of this destroyer, and two guys, and they got a hold of my wrist. I went limp. They tugged on me. They couldn't pull me up. Then two more got down. They finally got me. I couldn't stand up.
Oh, you had to be exhausted.
And the young lieutenant that was the commander of the destroyer told the corpsman to go get the medicine. He brought back a bottle of whiskey. He told me to take a drink. I says, I don't drink, sir. I says, you have it. And he took a big two gurgles out of it right in front of the crew. Then the next afternoon, I went back aboard ship on what they call a bosun's chair, where the two ships get alongside each other and they shoot lines one to the other and get one bigger and bigger, and they're going 15 knots and you're out there and they're rolling and rocking. One time the line's pulled to where it's dripping water, the next time you're almost in the water. It's another scary day.
Oh, it sounds like it. I don't want to belabor the point too much on this with your time overboard, but when you spend 4 hours in the water and your ship is long gone, you have no idea where that is. You've probably heard stories about other areas where guys are in the water and there are sharks in the area. I'm not saying necessarily there. It seems to me that it would occur to you at some point, I might not get back aboard a ship. I might drown out here in the ocean.
Oh, yes. I thought about that. I thought who was going to spend my insurance and all that, and about my parents and my relatives, my brothers and sisters.
What was it that maybe kept your mind focused and kept you afloat and kept you going until you were rescued?
To survive, to live. A person doesn't know what they can do until they're put to the test.
The Navy definitely put you to the test.
Oh, they did everybody.
So you're picked up by another ship, a destroyer. How long was it until you got back aboard the Callanan Bay?
Probably 20 hours, more or less.
The guys give you a hard time when you rolled back on?
Oh, yes, when I went back aboard ship. They, coming across, they said, cut the line, let him go swimming again. And then that afternoon when I was sitting up on the flight deck recuperating, and one of the gun turrets, our executive officer, walked by and he said, Gazio, if I want somebody to deliver a message to another ship, I'm going to call on you. He says, you were walking on that water.
That's great. I imagine there are a few guys who are happy to have their favorite cook back, too.
Well, they don't miss one person.
The food still gets made.
Oh, yes.
Well, I can't imagine being in your shoes or in your swim trunks, as the case may be. You probably wished you would have had swim trunks at that point. But I know there's still much more to come. So that was one close call that Claude Gazio survived. Not the one he got his Purple Heart for. That is still to come. And that incredible underdog story that unfolded near the Philippines in October of 1944. We'll get more on that when Hometown Heroes continues next on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Tell us about your hometown hero. Email your story by clicking on the Hometown Heroes link at kmj580.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ and kmj580.com. Remember, if there's a veteran in your life that you'd like to tell me about and see if I can catch up with him or her on this program at some point, you can email Paul at kmj580.com. We continue now with Claude Gazio, Navy veteran of World War II, wearing his Purple Heart hat today. He hasn't told us yet how he earned that Purple Heart. but we're going to hear about it. And to kind of set the scene for you, for the experiences he's about to talk about that unfolded in late 1944, let me read from you the citation, Presidential Unit Citation, issued by James Forrestal, Secretary of the Navy at this period. The citation reads, "For extraordinary heroism in action against powerful units of the Japanese fleet during the Battle off Samar, Philippines, October 25, 1944, silhouetted against the dawn as the central Japanese force steamed through San Bernardino Strait toward Leyte Gulf, Task Unit 77.4.3 was suddenly taken under attack by hostile cruisers on its port hand, destroyers on the starboard, and battleships from the rear. Quickly laying down a heavy smoke screen, the gallant ships of the task unit waged battle fiercely against the superior speed and firepower of the advancing enemy, swiftly launching and rearming aircraft and violently zigzagging in protection of vessels stricken by hostile armor-piercing shells, anti-personnel projectiles, and suicide bombers. With one carrier of the group sunk, others badly damaged, and squadron aircraft courageously coordinating in the attacks by making dry runs over the enemy fleet as the Japanese relentlessly closed in for the kill, two of the unit's valiant destroyers and one destroyer escort charged the battleships point blank and, expending their last torpedoes in desperate defense of the entire group, went down under the enemy's heavy shells as a climax to 2.5 hours of sustained and furious combat. The courageous determination and the superb teamwork of the officers and men who fought the embarked planes and who manned the ships of Task Unit 77.4.3 were instrumental in effecting the retirement of a hostile force threatening our Leyte invasion and were in keeping with the highest traditions of the United States Naval Service." That was the Presidential Unit Citation for the Task Unit 77.4.3. Now, when I read 2.5 hours, you waved your hand. Was it longer than that for you?
It was 4 hours better. I mean,
so the Secretary of the Navy didn't give you guys enough credit there.
Well, a lot of people didn't give credit for this battle. It was a battle that was forgotten. I mean, I can remember seeing, I think it was a Johnston, firing his torpedoes and his guns at a battleship, go through the smoke screen. It was quite a horrible sight to see. I mean, I still remember those days every once in a while. A lot of nights I don't sleep too well, but I guess that goes with old age too.
Well, a lot of people take that for granted. They don't realize how much these things can stay with you and how intense these experiences were. Did you realize at the time, I'm sure the guys in charge and the uppity-ups had an idea of how outnumbered they were, but as a man on the crew of a ship, did you realize how outnumbered and how big of an underdog the U.S. forces were?
Yes. The captain was very good. He got on the loudspeaker and told us, and I give credit to my captain, that he stood on the open bridge with a ball cap hat on and gave orders. So everybody aboard ship that was on topside could see him up there. I was a gunner on a 20-millimeter anti-aircraft gun, and we watched him. He was there. It was a surprise, not a surprise, but it was an honor to serve under him.
That sounds like that really inspired the rest of you to see him take that leadership that way.
It did. It made us all feel if he could do it, we could do it.
So if you're on a 20-millimeter gun...
Yes, that's an anti-aircraft gun.
It sounds like you had plenty to shoot at.
Well, for 4 hours we didn't, because we were strictly under attack by surface units. In the afternoon, about 2 hours after the engagement, we were attacked by Japanese kamikazes. We took... The Kelinan Bay took 3 suicides. The ship called the St. Lo. It was commissioned the Midway, and it was out at sea when they made the big new Midway. They changed the name to St. Lo.
Mm-hmm.
It was struck by a suicide. It went through the rear elevator and exploded and blew the ship. I saw guys flying 300 and 400 feet in the air.
Holy moly.
The elevator went over 500 feet in the air, and I have pictures. Everybody says, no. Well, pictures don't lie. If you measure a carrier from a picture that was an authentic picture, the carrier is 500 foot long, and it's an inch and a half. You turn it on, it's upside down, and it's an inch and a half. That means it's 500 foot. And I have a picture that says that that elevator went 500 foot.
Well, and the bottom line is that was the extreme devastation inflicted on the St. Lo by a kamikaze attack.
That's right.
And your ship, which was essentially the same size, correct?
Right.
Same class?
Same class.
Took three kamikaze planes.
Well, the St. Lo, I think, took one or two before it, too.
Mm-hmm. But it just depends on where those planes hit.
Right. They had their elevator down. Went into the hangar deck and exploded.
So I dodged some pretty big bullets again there.
Oh, yes.
And I imagine when you're in the thick of a battle like this, and knowing how outnumbered you are, seeing the devastation like what you saw happen to the St. Lo, you probably are hesitant to ever believe that that battle is actually over. Do you know when it's over?
Well, no. You're always looking for the next one.
So what was that like? You just described some of those scenes that you saw with your two eyes. As far as what you were personally doing, what your duties were, and how close some of that enemy fire and enemy attack came to you, can you tell us about that?
I was a gunner on a 20-millimeter anti-aircraft gun. We were taking hits with armor-piercing shells from the battleships and cruisers. One of them went through our ship. Piece of shrapnel came loose and caught me in the left leg just above the knee. And that is what I got my Purple Heart for. But they were using armor-piercing shells on us. If they'd have been using explode on contact, we wouldn't be here. They shot shells, 16 and 18-inch shells, in one side and out the other without ever exploding. They just went through us like you take a 45 and shoot at a tin can. It just kept right on going.
Well, thank the Lord that's what they were using in your case.
Yes. Thank God, yes. They thought, the Japanese admiral afterwards said he thought we were first-line carriers, big ones, but we weren't.
So that still is a little more than a nick and a scratch, though. You've got a fair amount of shrapnel in your leg. I imagine it didn't feel very good.
No, it didn't.
Did you get some medical attention, or did you have to just stay right there and keep firing?
They took it out 3 days later without any anesthetic, anything. The anesthetic was a man with his left hand wrapped with a piece of lead pipe in the middle of it, and if I moved, they put you to sleep. We had people from the suicide planes that had their skin burn off their back, and we had one guy with a piece of shrapnel a foot big in his back. I mean, we didn't have supplies, the stuff necessary to keep people from having pain. So they did the best they could. It's hard to think in the middle age that we were in that we didn't have. We had good doctors. I agree. We had the best. But they did not have enough stuff to work with. They didn't expect this kind of stuff.
And you didn't have to look very far to see someone who had it a little worse off than you.
Oh, yes. It was there. Everybody knew it. A lot of the guys that were on the guns on top side, we took the suicides, the gas burned them bad. Other ones were hurt worse. They had shrapnel worse than I did. So, we just went ahead and forgot about it. The corpsman came by, put a patch on my leg, wrapped it up, and I stayed right on my gun, never left it.
Getting back to the big picture here and how outnumbered you were, the devastation you had seen firsthand with the St. Lo being obliterated, the blows that you knew your ship had taken. Could you believe that you actually survived that? I imagine there had to be plenty of moments in that where you said, this is it. This is the last stand. This is all we have left.
Well, we all did. I mean, everybody aboard ship thought we were. And the captain got on the on the loudspeaker and says that the ship has taken all it can take and it's up to the crew to save her. Everybody turned to, buckets and pedaling and patching holes and doing what we could, fighting fires. And we did make it, thank God. But we thought we were down. I mean, it was bad.
What did it feel like when you realized that you had indeed made it, that this battle was over and the good guys in your mind had won?
You don't think much about it. I mean, you push it out of your mind. You don't want to think about it. When you see your friends expire right there and what people had or did go through. And then in the afternoon, of course, we took the suicides that were another thing. I got the other leg slit from a piece of metal off one of the airplanes that we took. The suicide cut my leg. Not bad, but it did, still got me.
When you look at your Purple Heart medal now, or you put on that Purple Heart hat, I know you're very involved with the military order of the Purple Heart, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. When you look at that medal, though, or put on that hat, does it take you right back to that day aboard the Kellinan Bay?
Well, yes, in a way. I mean, to this day, when I think about all this stuff or I talk about it, it kind of brings tears to me. I mean, I had a lot of good friends that were badly hurt and some died. It was an experience I wouldn't want anybody to go through if they could get away from it, but I did it. I'm proud I did it. I'm proud I survived, and I'm glad to be here.
Well, and I'm glad you're here and so thankful that you're sharing some of these experiences with us so that we know, you mentioned all your friends that didn't come home, that we know what that sacrifice was about, how great of an accomplishment they contributed to. And we know who paid that price of freedom, the freedom that we all enjoy today. I do want to read for our listeners another short note. This was a few weeks after the battle, and a note from the Executive Officer, Commander, U.S. Navy Executive Officer R.C. Bauer. This was when you got back to Pearl Harbor. Welcome to Pearl. Your successful fight against great odds will live as one of the most stirring tales of naval history. The people of our country and those of us in the Naval Service are grateful and proud of your outstanding performance of duty against the best the enemy could offer. As long as our country has men with your heart, courage, skill, and strength, she need not fear for her future. To each and every one, well done. And then it's signed Nimitz. That was passed on by the name I mentioned, Bauer, but that was from Admiral Chester Nimitz. And you also had some personal notes that were sent to you, which I know meant something. But when you hear a paragraph like that, I imagine that makes you feel like you did something right.
Right.
Well,
it was an honor to serve my country.
And I can tell it still means the world to you. Those listening at home can probably hear the emotion in your voice. I know it's very powerful, and I want to say...
Well, until I joined the Order of the Military Order of the Purple Heart, my family, nobody knew the experience I've had. They knew I got the Purple Heart, but I didn't talk much about it. I joined the Purple Heart, and we talk about it to get it out of our system.
It's a lot easier to talk when you have guys that know what you went through.
That's right.
We need to catch our final commercial break right here, but we're going to pick up on that, talk about the Military Order of the Purple Heart and how Claude Gassio is involved serving veterans today through that organization. This is Hometown Heroes on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Now, more Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ. We continue with Claude Gassio, a Valley veteran of World War II, served in the U.S. Navy, earned a Purple Heart during that intense battle off Samar in October of 1944, a battle that's been captured for posterity in a great book called The Last Stand of the Tin Can Sailors, The Extraordinary World War II Story of the U.S. Navy's Finest Hour. That's by an author named James Hornfisher. Highly recommend that book if you have a chance to read it. There have been a couple documentaries produced based on that book as well. And Claude Gassio, who was there, says it's all pretty accurate. So I guess that's all the endorsement that you probably need. That was a great turning point later in the war for the U.S. Navy, perhaps its most improbable victory of the war, an underdog story that, yeah, I'll say it again, was even more of an upset than Fresno State winning the College World Series in Omaha last month. And Claude, I could hear in your voice as we talked about those events of October 1944 how real that still is for you, how the loss of your friends is still something that that grieves you deeply and is very emotional for you. And I imagine that all of those emotions are part of why you're involved with the Military Order of the Purple Heart and why you're involved in giving back to veterans still today. Tell us what you're up to with the Military Order of the Purple Heart.
Well, for the last 4 years, I've been VAVS officer for the Veterans Administration for the Purple Heart. I solicit donations for the veterans in the VA hospital and the rest home that's on the property at Clinton and Fresno Street.
So those donations go to caring for them?
Yes. It is toothbrushes, toothpaste, shaving cream, shorts, T-shirts, socks. I can't name all the stuff. If they need it, I try and get it. I get them glasses, reading glasses. I get them other things. All the money I get, every dollar, I get nothing for what I do. Every dollar, if I get a dollar is spent at the VA hospital. My time, everything I do is what I owe my country and my veterans.
And it sounds like that's very fulfilling.
And I'm proud to be able to do it.
Well, and hats off to you for doing it. I know that it's greatly appreciated by them. And I think you just answered the question that I was going to ask. What do you get out of it? I think it's pretty clear that you get that fulfillment that comes from serving your country still.
The satisfaction that I can help somebody is very gratifying to me anyway. When I see the face of the guys that have been in the hospital, they're sick, bad. It helps me forget what I went through.
Well, and there were plenty of times during your service in World War II that you needed help from other people. You needed someone to pick you up out of the ocean when you were out there for 4 hours after going overboard.
That's right.
You needed some help after you took shrapnel in your left leg and shrapnel in your right leg.
And to this day, I don't know how many people on the destroyer that picked me up is here to talk about it. I don't know. I mean, you don't.
That would be pretty interesting to talk to someone who was there that day, wouldn't it?
That's right. That the guys that picked me up.
Well, what was the ship named that picked you up? Do you remember?
The Hull, I think.
The Hull.
Yes.
Well, maybe we can look into that. That would be pretty amazing if 60 years later we could track down someone who remembers picking up this straggler from the Kellinan Bay.
Yep.
So if people want to help you out in getting money for patients at the VA hospital, those in the rest home there as well, providing those needs that so many of us take for granted, the little things that can go a long way for someone in that situation, they can call you at home. Is that a good idea?
They can call me. They can write me.
Well, I'll go ahead and give out that phone number.
And we are a tax
deductible.
Well, you can deduct it off your income tax.
And that is motivation for some folks. So this is much like the Veterans Wall that we talked about earlier, the Wall of Honor that's there at the VA hospital. This tax deductible as well. The phone number, if you want to get in touch with Claude, maybe you just want to call him because you heard him on this program and you want to thank him for his service to our country and all the things that he endured that are still so powerful. If you do call him to thank him, maybe you can give a little bit too to his cause of helping the veterans at the VA hospital. His phone number in the 559 area code is 229 1842. So get a hold of him. He'll give you the information, where to send the check, what to write on it, all of that. And as he said, every dollar goes to veterans who are being cared for at the VA Medical Center in Fresno. Let me give you that number one more time, too, for the Wall of Honor. It's a different number for the Wall of Honor that Bill Dietzel is organizing. You heard from him earlier in the show. That number is 291-1239. And again, for the Military Order of the Purple Heart and the donations to go to patients at the VA hospital, that number for Claude Gassio, 229-9842. Have about 30 seconds left in the program today. I know that's not enough time to say everything that's on your mind, Claude, but any last words that you'd want to share to the young people who did not experience World War II, the most important thing that they should remember about what you and guys like you did?
My generation, we did what we could for our country, and I hope the young generation does the same. Without the people that do this, we'll never be the same country. We need you young people to step forward.
Couldn't say it any better than that. Thank you for stepping forward. Thank you for your service to our country. Claude Gassio was our guest today. We'll be back next week with another edition of Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ.